Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Nico, on the other side, that 99 was the year he was born, so he doesn't remember this. I don't know if they even talk about this as significant, but everyone was concerned when it went from 1999 to 2000, something was going to happen with the computers. I don't even remember exactly, just the world was going to end. All the computers that controlled the water mains and the computers that controlled our security systems and everything was just going to implode because it was going to go from 1999 to 2000. It was something crazy was going to happen, the whole Y2K bug or whatever. I don't remember exactly if there was more to it than just the idea of the numbers changing. I'm sure there was, because I remember it was Y2K bug, right? Isn't that thing called the Y2K bug? I don't know. Anyway, I remember a whole lot of fear that something crazy. So that was like the one year we were like waiting. Like everybody was, you know, at we were wondering if something crazy was going to happen. All the lights were going to go out or something when midnight hit. But instead, nothing happened. And I remember I was at a buddy's house, my buddy Andrew. And we were up late, and we were quietly in his house making bologna sandwiches on bagels. Why that sticks out in my mind, I don't know, but it does. Me, Christian, and Andrew making bologna sandwiches at like 4 o'clock in the morning in the year 2000, 25 years ago. That's crazy. It's crazy. Crazy. 888-808-1019. So I'm seeing, if you didn't know, Trayvon Diggs was cut by the Dallas Cowboys. He has now been picked up by the Packers, who clearly, you know, are in need of some help on defense with some of the injuries, obviously, losing Micah Parsons. So he's now on the Green Bay Packers, which is an interesting situation with Trayvon Diggs and the Cowboys. And, you know, we spent a lot of the show talking about the Giants and how the Cowboys are going to handle this game against them on Sunday, and the Giants should reciprocate. And you know, I don't want to be picking seventh. That would be a disaster after this year. But it does bring up the question that's kind of been around a little bit here this entire holiday season about players on Christmas, on Thanksgiving. Because Trayvon Diggs apparently, now look, they've had other issues with him. They signed him to a long-term deal, a five-year deal a couple years ago after his incredible season. And, you know, they've had some issues with the way he's rehabbed from injuries. He hasn't really played a lot of games. But the latest news, for whatever it's worth, is they played that Christmas game on Christmas. Idiot. Christmas game in Washington. And he has family in Washington, and he wanted to not fly home with the team. He wanted to just stay in Washington, and he asked the Cowboys if he could stay in Washington and not fly home. They said no. Apparently, he asked twice. They said no, and apparently, he didn't listen. It's reported that he stayed in Washington, didn't fly home with the Cowboys, went to a concert with family or something, and now he's cut. And, I mean, I don't know if that's the exact reason, but seems interesting that it wouldn't be. But, like, so it begs the question, like, because on one hand, like, you know, Trayvon Green talking about it's unfair and we're human and playing on Christmas, it ruins your whole week, it ruins your holiday, it ruins this, but makes like that. We all have a tough time taking that one. I mean, you guys, you're playing professional sports, you're making millions of dollars. I know every Dallas Cowboys play every year on Thanksgiving. The Lions play every year on Thanksgiving. Christmas is now a new thing in the NFL, but it has been in the NBA. And while I understand, no one's going to want to hear professional athletes complain about playing on the holidays when they're making the kind of money. It's one of those things. I think every one of us listening right now would take a multi-million dollar job if part of it was working on Christmas. I was making a hell of a lot more money than Green when I made, you know, when I was doing Christmas shifts here at the Fan. But we all get that. So, like, I don't think anyone wants to hear the complaining about playing the games. But I have to admit, though, like, I do understand as a human being, you miss out on all these holidays. You would think, especially as the Cowboys are now going to treat this game as a meaningless game and maybe not play Dak in the second half or whatever. Like, I understand there's team rules and nobody's above the rules or whatever, but like, if someone's from the area in the game you just played and he wants to stay behind with his family on Christmas, is that an unreasonable request? Like, I get it. I'm in the camp. Make a lot of money. Part of it is playing on holidays. You know, you have every 4th of July off or whatever. And same thing with baseball players. They play on the 4th of July and Memorial Day and Labor Day, but they obviously get all the winter holidays off. But, like, I get it. I can understand why even when you are making all that kinds of money, you still want to be home with your family on Christmas, but no one's going to want to hear complaints. It's what you do for a living. You make a lot of money to do it. But if you could somehow, like, if the team could do you a favor and help you with your family's holiday, if the circumstances allow, I mean, I feel like, don't you think they should have just said, sure, stay home with your family in Washington, meet us back at, you know, I don't know. But you can't just, if you ask them and they say no, I don't think you could just skip it and say, forget you. I don't care what you said. I'm doing it anyway. But I would think that if you could accommodate these players after Thanksgiving, after Christmas, and allow them to be with their families, especially if they happen to have family in the city you're playing on that day. I mean, is it that big a deal if he flies back the next day? Again, I'm not part of an NFL team. I don't know how that works, flying home, how important it is to travel together, team rules. I get it. I guess I get it. But I would think you'd be willing to accommodate someone to be with their family on Christmas if made possible. But I guess not. But now he's a Green Bay Packer. 888-808-1019. And we'll see if he can help them. They are locked into the seventh seed in the NFC playoffs. Love has been banged up. They clearly lost their best defensive player in what was once a trendy Super Bowl pick. I don't think anybody's putting much stock in moving forward now in the NFC playoff picture. Eric in Long Island. What's up, Eric?
C-Mac, how you doing? I'd like to just talk for a second about how to prevent tanking, more so how other sports, I think, handle it much better.
Okay.
I think a great sport to handle it really, really well, and I hope Craig lets you talk about it, he's always an anti-hockey guy, is the NHL ping pong system. You know, yes, I'm a season ticket holder at the UBS Arena. My team had a 3% chance at the first overall pick. Now it's sold out, and there's number 48 jerseys all over the arena.
Yes.
There were 9 or 10 teams worse than them last year in the regular season.
Yep.
There was no incentive for them to lose. They gained nothing by losing. They tried to win every game the whole way through. Yes, 3.5% doesn't happen very often, but, you know, what the ping pong ball system did.
Yeah, but you guys lost the All-Star game, so they gave it to you. Everyone knows that.
Okay. Well, yes, but the point is,
at least that's the theory.
Right. But the system did especially for that team. I mean, that team now has a guy for 15 years. He's 18 years old.
Yep.
I mean, you know, and again, they were the 9th worst team.
Right.
They were not the second worst team.
I get it. The lottery does do that, right? We just saw it in the NBA as well with the Dallas Mavericks. After they trade away their superstar, who the city loved, they were able to get that first pick. The lottery does work. I would say, unfortunately, NBA too. The NHL, for the most part. Now, again, I don't want to dismiss it because it's Jack Hughes is such a big part of the Devils. Obviously, you just mentioned what's going on with the Islanders. We've seen big first overall picks be enormous. Crosby for the Penguins, and so there's plenty of examples in the NHL. But baseball, the NHL, I don't know if the draft is as impactful as the NFL. I mean, that these guys come in immediately and make immediate impacts. I mean, they come in, they're immediately the franchise leader. You know, whoever gets Mendoza, he's going to step in and be the most important player on the team immediately. And that's almost, that doesn't always happen in the NHL. There is the AHL, Major League Baseball obviously has the minor leagues that you play for years before you even see these kids. The number one draft picks have turned out really well, but it's, you know, some of them have at least, you know, Bryce Harper and Mike Trout wasn't the first one, but Bryce Harper. A lot of these guys end up becoming really impactful, important players, but it takes years where the NFL, boom, you know. You draft Mendoza, immediately he's the most important player in your franchise. I don't mind the ping pong ball. It's better than what they have right now. I do think the point system I laid out earlier is still even better than that. Lou in Astoria. What's up, Lou?
Hey, how you doing? Happy New Year.
How are you? Happy New Year, Lou.
I'm okay. Listen, even though you usually quickly hang up on me, let me see.
No, that's not true.
I'll be quick, okay? Listen.
Go ahead.
I love the late George Steinbrenner, okay? And I know you don't like the conversation right now. This is why you get uncomfortable. But anyway,
I just don't like comparing him to his son at every turn, but yes.
But, okay, listen. When George Steinbrenner, as far as I was alive, he saw a player that beat the Yankees up, let's say like a Guerrero or Jackson, he would tell his team, I want you to go get that guy. Okay. Nobody's going to be better than me. You know what I'm saying? If you can't beat him, join him, okay? That's the attitude that George Steinbrenner had. Not only that, but, Chris, he once said, and I quote, there's two things in my life, breathing and winning, okay? Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to...
His son does not have that.
Exactly. Well, when it comes... Listen fair. To this. When it comes to the our GM, okay, if you remember, okay, he refused to sign Alex Rodriguez, and the boss went over his head. I said, I want him in here right away. And he actually ended up saving your favorite GM job in 2009. Not only that, but in 2004, when he was hitting 400 in the first three games against the Red Sox, he would definitely have another ring, if you remember that series.
Give me that last one again.
In 2004, when A-Rod came to the Yankees, okay, he was hitting 400 in the first three games against the Red Sox, and our great Mariano blew two saves. Otherwise, he would have had the championship in his first year.
No, I get it, but he didn't. And I don't know how you remember it, but I remember Hank, not Hal, not George, but Hank being the driving force of getting Alex Rodriguez back, not George. I think George was already in decline, and I don't think George was the driving force of that. I could be wrong. I'd have to go check. George was definitely still with us, but I remember Hank being the driving force, and Hank was more like his father than Hal is. I think that's fair. The idea that Hal doesn't consider winning the championship like breathing, I think is fair. But again, how many owners do? And I don't know about you, but I don't think the Dodgers necessarily even feel that way. I think they've been given an opportunity to handle this way because of the contract that they gave Ohtani. I mean, who's the other team? Like, the Astros have been as dominant, right, in this time period and won championships. Do you think it's because their owner cares more about winning than breathing? Like, it doesn't – you don't have to. You don't have to. You don't have to be great necessarily. And again, when you talk about George was willing to do this and nobody, he would do that. When George was running the team, he didn't have to put money in the pockets of anybody else. George never had to worry about being taxed and putting money in the Tampa Bay Rays pockets to come and beat him. He never did. I don't know how George would have handled it. I don't know how George would have handled the luxury tax. I don't know how George would have handled spending $320 million, having $320 on the payroll, but actually spending $370 million. Like, I don't know. You might think you know. We don't know. We don't know. He didn't have to do any of that. All right? I'm not trying to tell you Hal is better than George. I would never say that. I've never said that, and I won't say that. He's not. But when you people call up and have selective memory of what George was and act like there was never a time period where the Yankees were as bad as they are right now, and that's just absolute nonsense. The end of the 80s and early 90s, the George-led Yankees were so much worse than anything we have seen under Hal, it's not even worth mentioning. He broke apart the team and felt like they had to have speed, and he brought in all these speedy guys who couldn't hit, and the offense went to crap, and they couldn't pitch either. And he made all these trades and sent everybody away, the famous one, you know, mentioned on Seinfeld, the Jay Buhner trade. Like, George ran the team into the ground in the late 80s, early 90s, where they were terrible. Dead seasons in July. We have seen nothing like that under Hal. Nothing. Now, again, I'm not throwing parades for it, and I'm not telling you Hal's better than George, but we talk as if George never had a time period like this, or George would have never stood for this. You're right. George might have fired Brian Cashman, might have fired Hal Steinbrenner, hired the wrong people and run the damn thing into the ground when he tried to take over from those wrong people. Like, we don't know. The Yankees might be far worse off right now if George Steinbrenner was running the team, because he doesn't have endless pockets like his son. They don't have endless pockets. He wouldn't be able to win a bidding war against Steve Cohen as much as his son can't win a bidding war against Steve Cohen. Where's he getting the money? Would he have made sure they had a third baseman going into last year? Probably. Probably. Would he have beat out Steve Cohen for Juan Soto? I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so. No. Would he guarantee you a championship? No. Nope. No, he wouldn't. But we act as if he would, when the only time they really won championships with him over the last, you know, since 1978, those teams were built when he was banished. We act like he would be guaranteeing the Yankees some sort of guaranteed win and they'd be winning in the postseason with him. The teams that won from 79 to 90 when he was banished didn't win a damn thing. Then he was gone. Gene Stick Michael built the championship team. Then he came back. They won with the team that he didn't build. And then when he started really making the big moves, they didn't win. When he wanted Giambi, when he wanted Sheffield, when he wanted those guys, they didn't win after that. And then the 09 team is built without him. So explain to me why George Steinbrenner, if he was still running the Yankees, would have all these championships when really, from the minute he took over until the minute he unfortunately passed away, he won two championships in 70 and 77 and 78. And outside of that, I could tell you other people were much more in part for the reason for winning the other championships that he was here for. That's all I'm saying. Love him. Great owner. Hall of Famer. His son's not like him. His son doesn't want to win as badly. Totally agree. Things would be different right now if he were the owner. Totally agree. But let's not act like he guaranteed winning and Hal is ruining this once glorious franchise. Like, I hate, the once great New York Yankees. Again, yeah, the once great New York Yankees that allowed Bernie Williams to be bullied in the locker room to the point that Mattingly had to step in, that had guys bringing in live animals, taking their 16-year-old girlfriends to team functions, like, you know, that great franchise, that once great historic franchise. Go watch the documentary on Peacock that Joel Sherman did about the early 90s Yankees. Go ahead. Tell me if Hal is ruining the once proud franchise that never saw anything like this. Doesn't mean I'm not disappointed he's complaining about $100 million and hasn't signed anybody, because I'm not happy about it. Vin in Marlboro. What's up, Vin?
Hey, how's it going, T-Mac?
Good. How are
happy
you,
here, man? Good, good. I mean, you know, I've been listening. I always listen to you, you know, pretty religiously. So, you know, I know your opinions, but,
okay.
You know, I think you're kind of out of bounds a little bit with the whole difference between the situation between the Giants and the Jets at this point. Like,
okay.
And I'll just kind of give you a few reasons why. Like, ultimately, you're making it seem as though the GM situation is inferior in some capacity, which I think, if anything, Muji has, if done nothing more, he's obviously brought in considerable infrastructure to build with from a pick perspective, mm-hmm. and he's got the third most cap space in the league next year.
I don't think Joe Shane has done a better job than Muji.
Well, there have been times where you were still on the Shane train up until about, you know,
no.
once Dable got kicked out. So all I'm saying is, at the end of the day,
I wanted Dable, but I don't think I've ever been that pro Shane.
Understand? That's fine. But mm-hmm. my point is, like, obviously, there's no worse place to be right now than someone who's still the GM, which no one even knows why he's a de facto GM.
Yep.
Like, that's a terrible situation in which to this point, they pretty much are going to have to do the Liam Cohn thing. Otherwise, there's no way they're going to get a real coach, in my opinion.
I don't know about that. I think you have an argument that it could hinder it, but just a blanket statement like there's no way. You're telling me,
sure,
John Harbaugh,
sure,
there's no way he would want to take over the New York Giants with Jackson Dart, a top pick, defensive players. He would not take it over a guy with that kind of cachet. I think the opposite. I would be more afraid of the Liam Cohen not wanting the job. Liam Cohen is the exact example. Liam Cohen got offered the job, right? young offensive coordinator, got offered the job in Jacksonville, turned it down, and then they fired the GM on unsteady footing, and then he took the
Correct.
Job. Like, that's the guy who you want. He's going to be tied to the GM. John Harbaugh, someone stable, is going to have enough cachet where even if they fire Joe Shane next year, he's not in any real danger.
I think that's a fair statement. All I say is also, like, if you just kind of look at, I do think it's one of those things where, yes, the Jets look like trash right now, mm-hmm. but if you just look down the rosters on both and just where you guys are at from a cap space perspective,
yeah.
like, I'm not sure this is as plug and play as everyone is making it seem. Like, ultimately, you have a huge decision with Kayvon Thibodeau. If you don't do that, then all of a sudden you now have Abdul Carter and an aging Brian Burns, who I'm not saying he's not a good player, but
is he
going to be ready?
He's one of the best defensive players in the NFL this year.
That's not what I just tried to say. What I'm trying to say is he's a very good player, but you pay him like a very good player.
Yes.
And it's not as though you have time for him to blossom. He's only going to decline
right.
because he's getting to the point
sure.
where he's going to, like every other D end in the league. It's just,
yeah.
there's a timing element to that. And I just wonder, when you look at this all, if it's as clear cut as you think.
It's 100% as clear cut as I make it. The Giants are in a far better position than the New York Jets. It's not even close. I don't even know, like, what's your point? Muji made a couple of trades because someone knocked him over with ridiculous offers?
My point is that they have
money to spend on players who aren't in the room yet, and you're pointing to all the good players on the New York Giants and saying they're getting older, and then have every expectation that Jets are just going to go find these good players who don't age? They don't have a quarterback. And this isn't to knock the New York Jets. I'm just saying the Giants are in a far better position. They have a young quarterback who has proven here, who's proven himself to be a good young player on rookie contract with a fifth-year option. They could have him for the next 4 years on the cheap. So that helps the salary cap on some level. They've got a lot more talent. I just had Brian Baldinger on the phone yesterday on Zoom and on the show yesterday when I was doing middays, and he told you the Jets defense right now is an NFL Europe team. You got to fill out an entire defensive roster with that salary cap. You got an offensive line and you got a wide receiver. The running back isn't coming back, I wouldn't think. So there's no running back, there's one stud wide receiver and a bunch of young promising kids who drop everything thrown to them, but they do get separation. You got no defense really to speak of whatsoever. McDonald has shown talent, he doesn't get home. Same thing with Johnson for the most part. You traded away two of your better defensive players for picks, and you don't have a quarterback. And you don't have an infrastructure or a coaching staff that you would have any belief could actually work with that young quarterback. Yes, you have cap space. I'm sorry. The Giants need a coach, absolutely. And they could hire another buffoon and this thing comes crumbling down. But if they hire the right coach, they have enough talent right now. They were up 19-0 over the Broncos. They were beating the Bears. They beat the Chargers. They beat the Eagles. Without Jackson Dart, they were beating the Lions. They were beating the Green Bay Packers. Like, I'm not trying to tell you that those losses count. Those losses are disgusting. Those losses are infuriating. And I'm not trying to tell you the Giants are a good football team. But there is enough talent here with the young quarterback, Scadaboo coming back, Neighbors coming back. They'll figure out a way to get out of Slayton's contract. They're going to bring in more wide receivers here. They're going to have a top pick that could get them a bunch more picks. Could theoretically be from the New York Jets. There is no doubt in my mind that the New York Giants are in a far, far better position than the New York Jets. Now, I didn't say that Joe Shane's any better than Muji. Never said that. Muji might go into, he had a solid draft, and even though I'll tell you that he got bowled over with offers he was smart enough to say yes to, but he was smart enough to say yes to. He made two good trades and had a pretty good draft. I am open to the idea that he's a better GM than Joe Shane. Absolutely. I want Joe Shane fired. Maybe not right now. I wish he would have been fired midseason, but I'm open to the idea that there's a smarter man and a better executive running the things, but there is no doubt. No doubt. If a job opens up, which one's more, like, if they do fire I'll ask you, Jet fans, if you want to call me up, 888-808-1009. If they do fire Aaron Glenn after one season, which job is more desirable? Which job is more desirable? Now, I know Woody Johnson's reputation, but right now there's a lot of flux. There's influx inside the Giants, unfortunately, because of John Mara's illness. Not exactly sure what's going on. But if that job opens up, which one is a more appealing head coaching position, the Jets or the Giants? It's not even close. It's not even close. Unless someone loves Mendoza, but you're not in a position to draft him. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Quick break. Come back with more of your calls.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Remember them playing this song at the World Series? It was better than Fat Joe, that's for sure. Oh, those were the days. Can they get back there right now? I mean, I think they're closer than most Yankee fans would think they are, but right now they got still work to do, and it feels like we're all waiting for Bellinger, and he still wants the 6 or 7 years. Oh, did I just say 6, 7? Cinema! The kids were in the car listening. They went to the movies. They were in the car listening when I did the whole 6, 7 thing. I feel bad now. I feel bad. They got a kick out of it. I remember that when I said 6:07 on the clock. Yeah, I bet you do. I bet you do. But that was the number one song, New Year's Eve, 2009. I'm trying to think where I was. I know I was at the studio when they won the championship. Nothing worse. I'm telling you the truth. Like, I know I'm about to get afternoons and it's all glitz and glam and, you know, Nico could hardly look at me. I know. I know. I'm just kidding. But I remember the last, like, 2009, I was in the studio, I was producing for Summers, I'm watching the game as he was on the air. I think at that point we were still the Met station, not the Yankee station, so we weren't covering the Yankee game. The Yankee game wasn't on the air, and I was watching in the control room while working on Steve Summers' show. But the worst one by far was I used to run the board for the New York Giants broadcast. I was the New York Giants board operator for Giant games, which is its own thing because it's very complicated. And I was doing it for a couple of years, including the 2011 season when they won the Super Bowl. And I had to watch the Giants win the Super Bowl in the studio on the little TV in the corner, listening to Bob Papa say it 16 seconds before I watched it on TV. Now, I know, like Draymond Green, no one wants to hear me complain, but that was not a fun way to watch my team win the Super Bowl. I loved working for the Giants. It was great. I've worked for them a bunch, you know, years after that. I did some sideline work for a couple years with them. Love working on the broadcast. John Schmelk, great, great man. Love John Schmelk back to the days when he was a producer here at The Fan. But that was a brutal night. They won, but man, it was like, I'm here working, I'm listening to it before I see it. It was just brutal. Brutal. 888-808-1019. The last two championships that this city, let alone my teams, have won, I was at WFAN for both of them. I was in the control room for both of them. Jay in Denville. What's up, Jay?
How you doing?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good. Love your show. It's a little busy. Trying to get sushi.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone. Oh, sushi for everybody tonight. Nice. I like sushi. That's a good one. I figured everybody's running out to the liquor store. Got to bring a bottle of wine. Can't show up empty-handed, honey. Make sure you get up. So, like, a lot of liquor store late, last-second stops, picking up frozen hors d'oeuvres.
Absolutely. We thought we were being smart and ordered like an hour and 20 minutes ago, and it's not ready. So I'm going to step out. So. I'm a North Jersey guy. Mm-hmm. I am pushing and have been pushing for the Giants to grab Anthony Campanile, who's the DC for the Jags. Mm-hmm. He comes from a legendary family in New Jersey of coaches. He coached on the only two New Jersey high school state championship, national championship teams in New Jersey history. he's coached at Boston College, Michigan. He coached under Fangio at Miami. He was the run game coordinator last year for Green Bay. Mm-hmm. This year, if you look at the Jags statistics, everybody's looking at their offense and Trevor Lawrence's accomplishments. Nobody's looking at the defense. And it's in his first year. He is his old school grit, preparation. He does not make mistakes. And all he does his whole career is build and teach players and get the best out of every one of them. Mm-hmm. He's fanatical. And the days of McAdoo Shermer and or Mike McCarthy, forget about it.
Well, look,
it's time to burn it down and to get.
Yeah, listen, and I just search on him. He is kind of a candidate. A lot of people are talking about him around the Tennessee Titans job. It sounds like, reading a couple of articles quick as you're talking, that he is going to be on the circuit. Like, he's going to be in the circuit. He's going to get some interviews. People think highly of him too. But I got to tell you, I have to be honest with you. I don't know him well. He is not a candidate for me, and for a specific reason. And look, I don't know. You might be right in everything you said. He might be a great head coach. Right now for the Giants, I need someone with head coaching experience. And the last place I'm going, I'm sorry. I know he's done well. You're right. The Jags defense has been good this year. The Jags as a team have been really good this year. And their offense and Trevor Lawrence has been the talking point, no doubt. Liam Cohen has been the talking point, but he's done a good job. The last place I would go in general, not specifically him, but in general, is a defensive coordinator with no head coaching experience. It's the last place I'm going. That just in general, because if I'm going coordinator, I need an offensive coordinator to work with my young quarterback. Plain and simple. It's very simple. It's not like I don't have a bunch of different tentacles to the reason for this. The Giants have a young quarterback who still needs to develop, who I want to work closely with the head coach, who I want to, like, you know, if you bring in your guy, Anthony Campanile, if you bring him in and you bring in a smart offensive head coach with him, offensive coordinator, and it works and Jackson Dart flourishes, well, now guess who's the best young executive coordinator on the market for the next year's coaching cycle? The guy who just turned Jackson Dart into a great quarterback. I want the coach-quarterback relationship. I want an offensive-minded head coach. Other than if I can go get a Mike Tomlin, or I can go get a John Harbaugh, or I can go, even if Bill Belichick is for some reason what the Giants want to do, like whatever. Like, if I'm getting an established, guaranteed, successful head coach, then I don't care if he's offensive or defensive. I don't care that Mike Tomlin was a defensive backs coach 30 years ago. Like, he's been the head coach. I don't care that John Harbaugh was a special teams coordinator 20 years ago. I don't care. He's been a head coach for 18, 19 years. He's won a hell of a lot of games. He's one of the best head coaches in the game. Like, give me him, I'll take him. That's what I want, number one. But if I'm going the coordinator out, me personally, I'm not even listening to defensive coordinators. They don't need a culture-building coach. They need a smart offensive head coach. Hire a good defensive coordinator, but I want the smart offensive head coach who's going to turn this quarterback into a legitimate threat and this offense into a scoring machine. That's what I want in today's NFL. They have Jackson Dart. Go find that guy. But I appreciate what you said about him, and he does sound like he's going to be in the circuit of interviews. Steve in Stanford. What's up, Steve?
How you doing, Chris?
Good. How are you,
first
Steve?
Of all,
what's
congratulations.
Up?
I'm good. Congratulations on your new gig. But
thank you very much.
As an overnight listener, I'm sorry to see you change your shift.
Well,
it's better for you.
Yes.
Both personally and professionally, I'm sure. But I'm going to miss you.
I apologize. We didn't take you into consideration when we made the decision, Steve. Next time, I'll make sure to give you
a call.
No, I'm just kidding.
I was waiting by the phone.
I forgot. It slipped my mind. But no, in all seriousness, thank you very much. I am going to miss the overnight. The next show, Friday morning, I am doing one last Friday overnight. So if you are, again going to be up Thursday night, New Year's Eve night into Friday morning, but it's going to be at 1 a.m., 1 a.m. Friday morning, my last overnight show, and I'm looking forward to it. And the last 2.5 years of doing the overnights has been incredible. I had so much fun, got to meet so many and talk to so many good people like you, Steve. And I'm excited, obviously, about my new gig and doing the afternoons, but I'll remember very fondly the last 2.5 years of the overnights.
Well, I'll try and call you on your last show, but I just one criticism.
Sure.
You know, Carly Simon had that great song Anticipation, which was, you know, hijacked by Heinz Ketchup. So now every time you hear that beautiful song, you think of Heinz Ketchup. Well, you did the same thing to me with the Allman Brothers' Midnight Rider and the Beatles' Good Morning and Mac the Knife. Every time I hear those songs, I'm saying, oh, okay, Chris is on. Great. I'm listening to FAN.
I know. So that's funny. I appreciate that.
Those songs are now yours. Yes. And if you're interested, I can explain the Y2K thing to you, but I'm sure your listeners don't care.
No, well, don't explain it too deep, but it was like a virus type thing? Was the bug?
No.
Was I right when I called it the Y2K bug? Was that a thing?
No.
Okay.
No, that wasn't it. I've been in the software business for 40 years, and back in the day, like the 1980s, 1990s, you didn't have gigabytes. You had a 10-megabyte hard drive. You had a 5-megabyte hard drive. So every space was important. So when you stored the year, when you stored somebody's birthday, you didn't store it as 1950. You stored it as 50. When you were keeping accounting and somebody bought something on December 30th, 1999, you stored it as 12/30/99. So now what's going to happen, it's now, you know, Y2K. What's going to happen... You know, you can't say if somebody was born 00, does that mean they were 100 years old? Or does that mean they were, you know, 1 year old?
Right.
So all the software that existed, all the accounting software, anything that contained a date, had to be changed. All the software had to be rewritten.
Right.
So now everybody's birth date had to be 19, whatever it was.
Yeah.
All the accounting software.
Right. And I feel like, and thank you for the call, I feel like we had a lot of that when Doge was talking, right? That all these, we had like voters and the birthdays where like anything that went past the thing, it automatically sent them back to, it sent the code back to 1872. So they found all these people who were 200 years old still voting. Remember that? I thought that was the story. I don't, not to get political, just remembering the story in the news. That's all. But I feel like that was like the same thing, that the date of birth reset something, and so it went, you weren't like, I was just reading it now, the Y2K thing, like all the date of birth 00 would be re-established as 1900 in the computer system instead of 2000, so everybody would be 100 years old. And I thought we had that with the voting thing when they found all these older voters who are 200 plus years old still voting, and it was actually like some computer thing. I don't know. Let's not go there, not on New Year's Eve. Did I say Doge? I did not. JT in Jersey City. What's up, JT?
Hey, C-Mac. Happy New Year, buddy.
Happy New Year, JT.
Listen, we got to commiserate together because I know you got a December birthday. I forget what day it was, but
it's not as bad as the
18th. It's not as bad as mine. So I'm going to make you feel better. Mine's the 24th.
You're born on Christmas Eve, yeah.
That totally sucks.
Yes, it does. I can imagine that. Not as bad as
the 18th, but let me get a couple of points in here. One, as I was listening to you talk about George and all this stuff, and then I'll get to Stearns in a second. I got my Stearns, you know, Cashman question for you as one Met fan to a Yankee fan. But let me just give you a correlation here. This is great. If you look at Steinbrenner and you look at Jerry Jones, they are direct parallels. They bought their franchises at a song.
Yep.
They both had immediate success, and then they had years where they went into the abyss.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable.
Well, I mean,
right?
George didn't. I know George got banished. It's a good parallel, except George had the second run. You know, Jerry won the 3 Super Bowls early on and now hasn't been back to an NFC Championship game since. George had 77, 78 and that run back in the World Series in 81 and then went into the abyss from 82 through 94. But then they won 4 championships in 5 years. So, I mean, that's, he had the late run. Jerry hasn't had that late run. But, and it's been much longer without any success. It's been much longer. But, yeah, no, you're right. The immediate success and then a long time period of messing it up. Yeah, I guess that's fair. But then, you know, again, whether it's mainly he was the driving force or not, he was the owner. They won four championships in 5 years. Steve in Bayside. What's up, Steve?
What's up, Chris? You know, I want to end the year on a positive note with Judge, but first, quickly on Hal. You know, Hal, I don't want to hear that Hal has to pay other teams the luxury tax when the Dodgers just spent $170 million on a luxury tax bill.
I know.
We've had this discussion before.
The Dodgers, again, we've had this discussion before. They make up for a lot of that money with Ohtani.
No, that's with Ohtani.
No, I understand.
Ohtani should be saving them money. And
Ohtani is saving the money.
Yeah.
Because we've went over this, you and I. They're supposed to paying him seven. Like, he's making $70 million for the year. They're only paying him two. Yes, it counts as 45 on the payroll, but they're saving, actually handing out $68 million. That money goes into account that's earning interest every single year. He's making $70 million for them in overseas market money, and so yes, the luxury tax they're paying is 170, but they're making millions of dollars that they can eat into that money via other ways. But I understand what you're saying. Yes, the actual luxury tax they're paying is $170 million. What did the Yankees pay last year? 40? 50?
60-something.
So I would venture to say that they're making close to $100 million off Shohei Ohtani to eat into that difference.
The Yankees aren't making that money. I understand everything you're saying, but also the Yankees are reported, at least, to have higher revenues than the Dodgers.
That is true from certain avenues. I don't know if they include the Japanese money market into that, but yes, they ticket sales and stuff here. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, let's end the year on a positive note with Judge. He had a great postseason this year, but he's taken a lot of criticism in recent years for God forbid he has a slump, for a couple of weeks in October.
Right.
I don't know if people realize that they're watching possibly the greatest right-hand hitter who ever lived. Now, look, Judge is still at the peak of his career right now, so this doesn't take into account that a decline phase and all that. But if you look at the all-time leaders in things like OPS Plus, which takes into account the ballpark factors and the different eras, the run environment, and all of this stuff, so you can compare players across decades. He's the fifth highest all time, and the four guys in front of him are all lefties. If you look at weighted runs created plus, he's third behind Ruth and Williams, both lefties.
Yeah.
So look, Aaron Judge, just take a second and appreciate what you're looking at.
Yep.
You're looking at possibly the greatest right-handed hitter who ever lived.
Yeah, no, Steve, you're not wrong. I mean, that's how good he is. We take for granted what we're watching. He is absolutely incredible. He's absolutely incredible. And as we look to the new year, and I gave you a couple things that have to stop in 2026 or things that have to change in 2026, there are things to be grateful for, right? As far as sports stuff, now obviously health, family, the normal stuff that us as individuals and people. But as far as like being sports fans in New York City, or New York, tri-state area, being able to watch Aaron Judge every year, and I talk about this a lot, and how I am, poetic about baseball, and it's different for me than every other sport because of the everyday ride along with your team and the companionship. I always joke, I have my buddy Mike is my best friend. Growing up, he's been my best friend forever. Best man at my wedding, who's my best friend besides now my kids and wife. My best friend's the New York Yankees. Like, they're with me every day. Like, it's a companion, like, unlike any other sport for me. And that's why I love it. And the idea, we get to watch Aaron Judge play every single day at his high, in his prowess, in his prime right now, is special. He's the best. He's better than Alex Rodriguez was. He's the best Yankee I've ever seen. He's the best Yankee I've ever seen. I know that comes without a title, and there are a faction of Yankee fans who can't understand that idea that he's the best when he hasn't won a championship. He's the best player I've ever seen. He's the best Yankee I've ever seen. And the idea we get to watch him every day is priceless. I'm thankful for him. I'm thankful for the New York Knicks. We haven't really talked about them. They're about to take on the San Antonio Spurs in a little bit. I'm thankful for Jalen Brunson and how he's changed this team. I'm thankful. Let's be honest. I got to give it to him. I was very critical of the hire. I was very critical of getting rid of Tibbs. Mike Brown has done an incredible job with this team. Now, it's going to be dictated on whether or not they get to an NBA Finals, win an NBA championship, because Tibbs got them, to the Eastern Conference Finals. They have to win that series to feel like he's done a better job than Tibbs. But right now, we're seeing... I was listening to Moose earlier, and we'll do this on the other side because I'm up against the break, but the franchise was on with him, and he was, CP, the franchise was on with him, and he was talking, this is probably the best version of Jalen Brunson we have ever seen, and the ball movement on this team and the incorporation of the bench and playing the hot hand down the stretch of important big games, like... Mike Brown just has this team playing incredibly well. And, I mean, at the point where none of us want to trade for a significant piece because we don't want to mess with this team because we believe this team and what they've done and the addition of OG Anunoby 2 years ago around this time was incredible. And they are as good a team as there is in the East, and they've got a chance for championship. We always ask, right, heading into every year, who's the next team that could win a championship for our city? I don't think there's any doubt. There's no doubt. Right now, the answer to that is the New York Knicks. So I'm thankful for Aaron Judge. I'm thankful for the Knicks. Thankful we get to watch Juan Soto play every day. He's not as good as Aaron Judge, no. And I said that even when he was a Yankee, he's not as good as Aaron Judge, but he is as fun to watch. He is an incredible player. And, the next 14 seasons to have him as here in this city with the New York Mets, we should all be thankful for that. There are some things to be thankful for, despite how ugly it's been. 888-808-1019. Maybe we'll get into some of those things in the final hour as I take you until 7 o'clock tonight. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. I think Ricky Ricardo comes up next to take you through to midnight. Ricky will have some music stuff for you, get you going right up until midnight. Little champagne, Ricky Ricardo. But I still got you for one more hour. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Be right back.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.